The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2014 Annual Conference, copyright 2014. If you have purchased this recording, you are free to make multiple copies for your school's use. You may not sell copies of the audio or post copies on the internet. Order additional conference recordings from this year's conference or previous conferences at store.accsedu.org. Find out more about the Association of Classical and Christian Schools at www.accsedu.org. Thank you.
My name is Scott Welch, and I teach at the River Academy. I've been there for about 15 years, and I teach logic, humane letters, which is an ancient literature, ancient history combo class. I teach hermeneutics, senior rhetoric, mock trial, and rugby. I want to start by reading the quotes that are on the top of your notes in your workshop manual. The first one is from the Ad Herennium, which is an ancient rhetoric text. And it says this, it says, "There are then two kinds of memory, one natural and the other the product of art. The natural memory is that memory which is embedded in our minds, born simultaneously with thought. The artificial memory is that memory which is strengthened by a kind of training and system of discipline." And that's what we're going to be talking about a little bit today, is that second part. There is the memory that comes, just we're born with it. And then there's memory that's artificial that you can actually train your brain to do. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. The second quote is from a book called Use Your Perfect Memory by Tony Buzan. Tony Buzan is kind of the father of the modern mind map. Have you ever heard of mind mapping? It says, "The only real difference between the middle-aged executive who has forgotten to phone someone he was supposed to phone and who has left his briefcase at the office, and the 7-year-old child who realizes on returning home that he's left at school his watch, his pocket money, and his homework, is that the 7-year-old does not collapse into depression, clutching his head and exclaiming, 'Oh God, I'm 7 years old and my memory's going.'" And so today what I hope to share with you is some of the things that we've been trying to develop at the River Academy, some memory techniques that are very practical. This is not a very philosophical talk about memory. I'm not going to go into neural pathways. It's about as practical as you can get. I'm going to try to talk to you about ways that we at the River Academy have tried to use specifically the Memory Palace, but some other things in our classes. And I'm going to try to get, like I said, as practical as possible, talking about some of the different classes and things we've memorized in those classes. In rhetoric, we read the Ad Herennium, which is a 1st century BC rhetoric manual. And it goes through the 5 faculties that every speaker should possess: invention, arrangement, style, memory, and delivery. And every year when I teach this book, one of the things that I realize is that I do a great job of teaching invention, arrangement, and style, and every year I skip the memory section. I've read the memory section, and every year I realize that I'm not going to teach it because I just never did get it. And it wasn't until a few years ago that I picked up this book, Moonwalking with Einstein by Joshua Foer. Has anybody read this book? A few of you? A couple of you? Okay. This is a great book, and a lot of the stuff that I'm going to talk about comes from this. And I've read a few books besides that now, but this is a pretty good book to help you with that. But what I realized is that what's in this book was really in Cicero all along, and I just didn't realize it. And so before we talk about some solutions to memory issues, which I think there are lots of them, let's talk a little bit about the problems with memorization. So if you look up here and you see the iceberg, if you can see the iceberg in there, kind of the iceberg analogy, we teach all sorts of things, right? We have workshops, worksheets and our pet projects and tests and all these things, and it's the entire iceberg. The problem is that if you ask kids about a week later to recall what you've asked them, or that you asked them to memorize last week, this is about what they have remembered. And it's not because they haven't studied hard. Okay, sometimes we think that if someone forgets something in a week, it's because they crammed. And I think that's just a teacher way of saying, I didn't help you. But I think that cramming is what most students do. Now, we tell them sometimes to cram over 3 days, right? But we're really not giving them a lot of time to, or giving them a system to help them memorize things. And so we do send them home. We tell them to memorize something that there's going to be a test on Friday, right? And we tell them not to cram, usually. We tell them to break it up over a few days, right? We tell them that you want to study on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday for the test on Friday. But we still find that at the end of the year, or even at the end of about 3 weeks, most of what we've taught them is completely gone from their minds. And I think as classical Christian educators, we know that it's not our job to give them material just to stick in their heads for a week and pass it, you know, be able to pass a test at the end of the week. But I find, as I've been doing this for 15 years, and I find I still have trouble teaching tools, and that I end up falling back into that worksheet test mentality. And I think, you know, I asked my kids to come up with a great picture for anyone who believes that that's still what our job is, and this is what they came up with. We believe that it's much more important for them to remember things for a little bit longer than 1 week. But again, I think sometimes that's what we fall back into, is worksheet, cram, test. Actually, it was funny. I was walking by a, I don't know if you guys saw these. There's a little thing that says, don't cram, pass, forget, which is great. It's one of the science things over there. But anyways, I mean, honestly, to go to what I think my point is for today, is to propose that memorizing, is an essential tool of learning, okay? We claim to teach tools, and I find that it's much harder to actually teach tools than it is to say that I teach tools. It's easy as a classical educator to say I teach tools, and you say, okay, well, what are the tools of this? You're like, well, it's grammar and all the logic and stuff that goes into it, but actually being serious and saying, let's teach some tools. But I think that memorization is an essential tool of learning. I think that teachers need to teach how to do it. I think they need to be guided through it, that classroom time should be dedicated to having kids memorize things. That sending them home Monday, telling them to memorize something on Friday, is not teaching them a tool of anything other than to cram. And that's what we find that they do. So why do students tend to forget what they actually manage to get into their heads? So they do, so Thursday night, they're diligent in cramming in the information. They come in, you gave them 20 science words with definitions. They get them into their head. First of all, a bunch of them don't, or at least a few of them don't, right? Not everybody aces the test. So those kids are lost because not only they didn't get it the first time, they're certainly not going to remember it the second time. The kids that actually did manage to get it in the first time are still going to forget it, okay? And not very long down the road. So I teach logic, and one of the things every year that I teach is the square of opposition. And so as I go through teaching the square of opposition, I feel like I do a pretty good job. They all get good grades on the test. And I have at the end of the year a cumulative final. And I take about 5 days to review everything we learned throughout the first two trimesters of our school year. And so as I go through this, I say, and now we're going to talk today about the square of opposition. And the puzzled looks on even the smartest of my kids is very disheartening. And the look isn't, oh yeah, I remember those, and that's it's literally, what is that? And sometimes there are kids that look at me, and I'm honestly worrying that they've never heard of it before. And so, the reason why that happens is there's scientific reasons for that. I am not a science guy, and so I read this in a book somewhere. Actually, I've read it in a few books, so it's there's more than one source. But 7 plus or minus 2 is what they consider the magic number in memory. They find that students tend to hold, or anyone tends to hold, between 5 to 9 items that you gave them to memorize over the long haul. If you don't help them put it into some sort of long-term memory, they're going to remember between 5 to 9 items. So how do students tend to memorize something? So let's say that we haven't given them any tools whatsoever. We just sent them home and said, here's your list, memorize them, have them done by Friday, there's going to be a test. And it's not multiple choice. You're going to have to come up with these things. So how do they do it? Well, one possible way is they stare at the paper. And I know this because I see students doing it, is they stand there and they stare at the paper, and I say, Johnny, what are you doing? He says, well, I'm studying for the test. I don't think there's a less possible way to memorize, well, a worse possible way to memorize anything but staring at a sheet of paper. It uses the least possible senses to memorize something. But that's one way that kids tend to memorize if you give them no instruction. Okay? Another one is called phonological looping, which is just a creative way of saying you say it over and over in your head. Okay? And that looks a lot like this. You'll see students go like this. They'll go. Okay? That's what that looks like. That's phonological looping. And then you have some teachers, I know that I've done this, you say, well, I want you to write it over and over again, because that's a real good way to help them put it into short-term memory. It's not going into long-term memory, it's just going into short-term memory, but it's creative and it sounds like we're teaching some sort of tool. But I don't think students do this unless you instruct them to do this. This isn't something that students naturally just think to do. And so unless you've told them to do this, they're probably not going to. And if they do it, you're still dealing with the magic number 7. Okay? So what are some solutions? What are ways that we have tried to create tools in our schools? And I'm going to say up front that obviously we believe in the grammar stage. We talk about how they're really good at memorizing. And so I think in the grammar stage, we do a really good job of teaching them how to memorize things. We give them chants and songs. I'm going to go through some of that. And we give them lots of ways to do that. In the secondary, I feel like we literally kick them off the boat into the water. And part of the reason is, it's not real cool to see a 16-year-old going, a sentence, sentence, sentence is complete, complete. Okay? They don't think it's cool. I don't think it's cool. And so they're not going to do it. Okay? They're not going to say chants. They might say them in their heads. And sometimes they might jokingly say them in some sort of ironic way. But they're not going to say things like that on their own. So one way of doing it in the elementary is rhyming funny sayings and chants. And so I'm going to give you one, and you guys can say the last part. We'll see if you guys got it. Okay? How about this one? In 1492,
on the sail the ocean blue.
There you go. That was easy. How about this? This one's a little harder. I before E. Like A as in. Okay. Good. Yes. If you guys know Brian Regan's a relatively clean comedian. He says that it's the I before E except after C, and it's when sounding like A is in neighbor and way, and on weekends and holidays and all throughout May. But you're always going to be wrong no matter what you say. So that's his I before E rule. 30 days has September. There you go. See how easy those are? We remember them, right? You guys were trailing off at the end. All the secondary teachers were trailing off at the end. That's what was happening. All right. This is one when I was in sixth grade. I remember that, I don't know what kind of teacher I had, but for some reason she was making us memorize some of the two-letter designations for the periodic table. But I remember it was in sixth grade, and my mom sat down with me and walked through them, and these are two of them that I learned in sixth grade. Okay, AU wants some gold, and AU is the designation for gold. And then want some salt, nah. And then she had to tell me that sodium was the same thing as salt. But funny sayings, rhymes, those things are memorable. I mean, obviously, we're still remembering some of them now. And we hear them coming down the halls. I have six kids. Five of them are in our school, and so I can tell you a bunch of their chants because they come home chanting them. And so they are very helpful. So chants are definitely helpful. In a way, it's kind of out loud phonological looping. You're using more senses. You're using both your own voice, your hearing, you're seeing it, and there's more senses involved. It is helpful to put it into your head, again, and it can make it more sticky for remembering. So that is one way of helping them. Again, in secondary, if you come up with a chant, it's got to be awfully cool for you teachers. I don't know if you guys have tried, but coming up with chants that are cool enough for them to want to get up in front of Grandparents' Day and chant, it is not easy, because I have tried. Raps work a little better, but then the grandparents don't want to hear them. So, all right. So chanting, you know, using things like Gilligan's Island, Happy Birthday. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on chants because you guys all have heard them. coming down your hallways, assuming that you're K through 12 or something like that. So another one, and I think this comes off the screen a little bit, but word takeaway. This was another one of my first ideas of how I could help them memorize, was I would write, let's say, St. Crispin's Day speech. I'd put the whole speech on there. Then on over here, I would put it with some words missing, like this. This is 4 score and 7 years ago. And then I would put it with just the first words and then dot, dot, dot. And so trying to do something to help them put it into their brain. And it was helpful, a little bit helpful. Acronyms, which of course our students are already doing, right? They know more acronyms than about anybody, anywhere. I thought I could keep up, actually. I thought it was pretty cool because, you know, every once in a while I'd say, all right, BRB, and I'd walk out and they're like, oh, Mr. Welch is so cool. Now they have things that just have no idea, long ones, and I'm hoping they're clean. So, I assume they're clean. So with some acronyms that we've done, I taught Latin for a few years, and so Mona O, warn, advise, remind, and so the first letters in warn are war, and then W-A-R, the three words for Mona O. That one's a pretty easy one. Okay, for the logic teacher, do I have any logic teachers in here? Couple, okay. Any student earning B's is not on probation. This is the rule for distribution. So, you know, if you have an A statement that the subject is distributed. In an E statement, both are distributed. In an I statement, nothing is distributed. In an O statement, the predicate's distributed, which probably makes no sense to you, but it's really cool. All right. For the rhetoric teacher, theory, imitation, and practice, which, of course, is a good tip. And I ate so many delivery men, which is invention, arrangement, style, memory, and delivery. So giving yourselves just some acronyms. Science teachers, do I have any science teachers in here? A few? Okay. My very educated mother just served us 9 pizzas. Is what? What is that? The planets, which of course now should say, my very educated mother just served us 9. So, it's not very exciting, that one, without the pizza. Please excuse my dear Aunt Sally for our math teachers. And for the geography teacher, anybody have this one? Great Lakes. Great Lakes. You guys are good at this. For the music teacher, and I'm a football coach, so I put football. I know other people put other things. And another one for the science teacher, Roy G. Biv. Now, the reason why I talk about doing this by coming up with acronyms, in the end, I'm going to tell you what I truly believe is that the Memory Palace is the most powerful way to memorize anything. I think that it's helpful across the board in every subject. And like I said, I'm going to show you some practical ways of doing that. So why would I spend my time talking about this stuff? The reason is because Memory Palaces, although helpful in every class, it's also very helpful to organize information to be able to put it into a Memory Palace. It's much easier to put in one word that you can remember in a Memory Palace than having to put in every item. So organizing information by using acronyms will help you even if you don't do a Memory Palace. It's helpful. If you use a Memory Palace, it's a great tool for organizing information to help them. And I believe, again, that it's the teacher's job to help students do this, whether it's coming up with acronyms for them or helping them come up with acronyms on their own, giving them some sort of tool to help them, sending them home, like I said, with a big sheet of paper saying, memorize this for Friday. When you haven't taken the time to possibly look for acronyms that you could help them with, I just think it's not helpful. I think that it's part of our job to do that. So this one here, Roy G. Biv, you'll notice that one of the things we do is we separate it out and we say Roy G. Biv, which leads us into our next one, which is called chunking. Chunking is taking things and breaking them into groups so that there's less things to remember. An acronym is a sort of chunking, okay? So when you chunk, you take, for instance, Roy G. Biv instead of Roy Biv, or whatever it would say. If you didn't break that into 3 pieces, it makes it a lot easier. So in chunking, you group items to decrease the number of things to memorize. At Carnegie Mellon, they did a case study on chunking. What they did is they had an undergrad come in every day, and like 5 days a week, and they would give him one number. They would start with one number, and he'd have to repeat it back. Then they would give him 2 numbers, and he'd have to repeat it back. When he got to the point where he couldn't remember the numbers anymore, they would decrease a number and give them to him again. And he did it between 1 and 2 hours every day for 2 years. If you can, I hope he was getting paid a lot. I don't know how much he's getting paid. And so what they found is that for the first, I didn't remember exactly how long it was, he was hitting the magic number of about 7 items. 5 to 9 items he could get pretty good. And then he would just kind of, it would kind of fall off from there. By the end of 2 years, he was able to remember 79 numbers per day on average. How did he do it? He started to chunk the numbers into groupings. And what he would do, there is a way of memorizing long strings of numbers, by the way, that I'm not going to talk about today. It's called the major system, but it's you can memorize pi, long strands of pi and stuff. But what he would do was he would break it into chunks of 3 and 4. The chunks of 3, he would make ages. So, for instance, he would see 8, 9, 3, and he would say 89.3, that's a pretty old man, okay? And that's how he'd remember 89.3. He would do four digit sequences by connecting them with track times. He was a track guy. So he would remember 3, 4, 9, 3 as 3:49.3, and he would say that's pretty close to the world record for a mile. And so he would do that and was able to expand the amount of information he was able to remember up to 79 items. Every year on Pi Day, which is March 14th, we do a competition to see how many digits of pi students can remember. And we've had, last year was the first year that I ever taught the major system to students, and we had a student remember 185, but they made a mistake in the middle. So it really only got them somewhere in the 90s, but they had up in the 180s memorized. This year, a girl did 151, broke the record of 90-something, got 151, and did it by chunking 3 digits together. And she created a rhythm. 437, 549, 862. I mean, she did it like that and was able to get up to 151, I believe is what it was. But that's another form of chunking. And we do it already. We do Social Security numbers, right? Why do we separate them out like that to make them easier to remember? Phone numbers, Roy G. Biv, SOHCAHTOA, and things like that. So we're going to do a couple different ways of chunking. There are a couple different ways of doing it. Sorry, it's kind of hard to read. It's much bigger on my screen. I don't know. But the first one is sequencing, which is creating some sort of order. So if you take, let's say you take these 6 words, right? They're kind of, you can categorize them pretty easy, things you'd find in an office. But if you wanted to help someone remember this, what you could do is you could create a sequence out of them. You could say that you walk in the door, you sit down in a chair, pull up to a desk, pick up a pen, write a letter, and mail it. And that little story, in fact, right before we came in here, I didn't actually have a chance to hear it, but somebody was talking about how to remember the quadratic formula by a story. And so there's ways of using stories as well to remember large amounts of things. So that's one way of doing it, sequencing. Another one is categorizing, so grouping like items. If you take this list of things, they can be easily grouped into 2 sections. What would they be? What would the sections be that you could group these into? What's that? Okay, people and things would be kind of a bigger group. Okay, we also have the shape of a thing, right? A cane, a candy cane, and a hockey stick all kind of have the same shape. And then we have kind of a sequence of people. We have small child, teenager, an old lady, to help you remember. Now, someone might ask, okay, well, it's easy to do when you're given words like this, but how could you do this in the classroom? And one example is, we read the Iliad every year, and I used to give the students this huge, it was like a 4-page sheet of all of the characters in the Iliad. And of course, the best way to organize them was alphabetically for them to remember, right? So you have Achilles right next to Aeneas, which of course have nothing in common whatsoever. And what I found was that whenever I took that same list and I separated them into Greeks, Trojans, and gods and goddesses, then separated them into male and female, then separated them into where they appeared in the book, it was much easier for them to remember who everybody was. And that it took me 10 minutes to do that, and I would say it completely revolutionized my kids' ability to remember the characters in the Iliad. So let's do one together. If you can, try. This is a list of a few words. Try to think of something that could categorize at least three. What would be something you could categorize into at least three? You can raise your hand if you want or just yell it out. Yeah.
Summertime.
Summertime, good. And what would you put in summertime?
Barbecue, chocolate syrup, and
awesome. I like it. Hey, that's good. I like it. Okay, that's one. What's another way of doing it?
Liquids.
Okay, liquids. Awesome.
Electronics.
Good. You guys are good at this. My students take a little longer. But yeah, you can categorize things pretty fast, and by doing that, if I were to give you this list right here and tell you to memorize it, or I were to give you this list separated out into easier to remember groups, which one would be more helpful? Obviously, the one you grouped for them. Okay? So that's chunking. So now I want to put together all of them into the memory palace. Okay? And so to talk a little bit about what a memory palace is, it's also known as the method of Loki, L-O-C-I, not the Norse god. The journey method or the Roman room method, it's all the same thing. And like I said, this is found as far back as the first century B.C. It was all in Cicero, so it should give our classical warm fuzzies that it's old. And so the goal of the memory palace is to take the things that are in short-term memory and put them into long-term memory. And one way of doing that, the most creative way of doing that, is to put them into visual memory. I could give you lots of reasons why I think that this is a good way to memorize. It works. But more than that, students absolutely love doing memory palaces. I have students all the time wanting to tell me their memory palace, which you're going to find, we're going to do one together in just a minute. You're going to find that memory palaces, something interesting is, everybody wants to tell you their memory palace, but no one ever wants to hear them. And so it's kind of a funny, or maybe it's just me that doesn't want to, I don't know. But we're going to walk through how to do one, and we're actually going to do one together. Like I said, I want to make this as practical as possible. So how do you do a memory palace? So let's say you have a list of things that you're supposed to memorize. We're going to memorize a list of 20 words. So the first thing you do is that you choose a place. It can be a real place or an imaginary place. It should be a place that you know pretty well. Okay? House, school. I'm going to say video game map. And some of you might think, well, you know, we don't want our kids playing video games. Well, that's great. Tell them not to. And maybe they won't. But I can tell you right now that my students who play video games, and I don't promote it. I don't tell them to play video games. My students who play video games are killers at memory palaces. And the reason why is they have hundreds of maps and houses and cities and towns in their heads that they can stick things in seconds. I've never seen anything like it. So you might as well, hey, think of video games as a tool of learning, right? You've been finding a reason to do that. So video game maps. A painting, somebody from the Oaks up in Spokane, Washington, they use paintings. So they'll have a painting in the room, and they'll actually, what you do is you look at the painting and you take items and visualize them in, for instance, Mona Lisa. One item would be in one of her eyes, one would be in the other, nose, mouth, and you can place items there. And like I said, this isn't going to make full sense until we do it in a second, but I'm going to talk to you about how to do it first. It also needs to have rooms and checkpoints. Okay, it can't have it, like this would not be a great room for a memory palace, this room right here, because it's just big and open. It's nice to have smaller sets of rooms. So here's what I want you to do. I'm going to take a quick drink. What I want you to do is I want you to close your eyes. I'm not going to take your wallet. So really close your eyes. Some people can do it with their eyes open. Okay, some people have been doing it for a while, can do it with their eyes open, but I find that for most people, especially there's a lot of distractions, close your eyes, and I want you to picture in your head your front door. So can everybody see their front door? Okay, so I want you to walk up to your front door, and I want you to put your hand on it. If it's metal, you know what it feels like. It's hot or cold, depending on where you live. Okay, if it's wood, you can feel the grain. Okay. You can look down and see the door handle. And so now what I want you to do is go ahead and open the door and walk in and close the door behind you. And I want you to start looking in whatever your front room is. And if it's just a little entryway, go maybe into your living room or whatever your first main room is. Okay, so I want you to look at all the furniture in the room, look at each item. And pay close attention to it. Look at the fabrics. Okay, think about what the fabrics look like. Now I want you to look, I assume in the room that you're in there's a chair. What I want you to imagine is, I want you to picture a pink camel sitting down with his legs crossed, and he's petting a black cat. How many of you can see this? You can raise your hand. You can actually see the, okay, good. So we have the pink camel. Okay. Now, next to the pink camel with the black cat, you see your headmaster. And he opens up a briefcase and begins handing you large sums of money. And this might be hard to envision. But can you picture them standing there handing you large sums of money? Okay, go ahead and open your eyes. You just did a memory palace, okay? It was a short one, it was an easy one, but you can see the power and the fun of being able to do visual memory. If I were to ask you what four items you saw in there, I think all of you could quickly say that you saw a pink camel, well, you saw your door, saw a pink camel, a black cat, your headmaster, and large sums of money being handed to you, okay? So if we had four items to memorize, you just did it in less than a minute, okay? Not real hard, right? Four items. So let's talk about what else we need to do. We need to map a route. So what I'm going to be giving you is I'm going to be giving you 20 words. Now, the sixth graders were able to do this in 6 minutes, and they remembered them 4 days later without review. So there's going to be a test. No, there's not a test. But what you need to do is you need to map a route. I like to put about 5 items per room. So whatever your front room is, we're going to put 5 items in there. So what we need to do is go ahead and close your eyes again. If you can do it with your eyes open, feel free, but please make sure you try this. I have some students that I can tell that I don't know if they're sleeping or dazing off. I know on the test, I know when I ask them 3 weeks later and 19 out of 20 students rattle off all 20 words without even a second thought and one student's struggling. I know that they didn't do a memory palace. So please, if you never do it after this day, at least try it today. Okay? So go ahead and close your eyes again. Like I said, if you want to try it with your eyes open, feel free. We need another room. So the room does not have to be adjacent, but it can be. So if you have a room that's connected, go ahead and walk from your that room you just walked into. Walk into a new room. And I want you to do the same thing as you did before without the pink camel. I just want you to start looking around, kind of get an idea of what's in the room. Look at the fabrics, look at the lighting, make sure that if there's a window, put the window in, okay? Don't shortchange yourself. Okay, so we have 2 rooms now, we need 2 more, so go to another room. And you can do kind of a beam there, you know, kind of Star Trek. So if there isn't a room that's adjacent or you want another room, just go there. That's what's cool about Memory Palace, you can go wherever you want. So go to another room, look around. And then go to 1 more room and just look around. All right, go ahead and open your eyes. So like I said, I like to put 5 things per room. What you just did was you mapped a route. That's the route that you're going to remember the things that we put into your memory palace. So whenever you want to remember those things, you just go back into each room and you remember the things that are in there by seeing them. You can make it sticky. I've never heard the word sticky so many times until this conference. I've heard it like 10 times, the word sticky. I got it from a book called Made to Stick, which is a great book by Dan and Chip Heath. And there's a helpful hints section back here that I'm going to talk about in a little bit on to make your memory palaces more sticky, easier to remember things. And then you basically need to put in about 10 minutes of review before you want to know it. And I mean 10 minutes of review for no matter what size. So if you can have a huge memory palace, it really doesn't take long to review it for a test or for whatever. So even though, yes, if you give someone a memory palace 10 years from then, they probably won't remember it all. But I bet you that if 10 years from now you showed them the list and gave them 5 minutes, they would remember their memory palace pretty fast. Okay? Okay, without further ado, here we go. So this is a list of 20 words. We're going to walk through them. I'm going to help you put them into your memory palace, and then we're going to see how well you do. All right? So, you guys are going to have to close your eyes, though. Got to go back in your memory palaces. Start in your first room. This is the same list I gave the sixth graders. All right? So what I want you to do now is you go into your first room, and I kind of work around a room. You can do it however you want, but it creates kind of order. So I usually start on one side and then kind of move around. What I want you to do is start with, we're going to put an apple. You can put it in a chair. You can hang it on a wall. You can anything you want. You can put it anywhere you want. I would encourage you to make it really big, like the size of a beach ball. You can make it any color you want. You can do anything you want with it. It's your apple. It's your memory palace. Okay? I would not make a small apple because you step into that room and there's a lot of things in there. So make it big. Big as you want. But there's an apple sitting there. All right? Now right next to there's a barber's chair. There's a guy sitting in it getting a haircut. Some guy's cutting his hair, or her hair, or she's cutting her hair. It's your memory palace. Okay, so our first thing, let's go back and look at it. First thing was apple. Second thing is haircut. Now, all of a sudden, while you're looking at this guy getting his hair cut, through the ceiling drops a mammoth. Okay? It's not a huge mammoth because it wouldn't fit in your house. So make it the size that will fit into your house. And this mammoth lands in whatever room it is. Most people, it's their living room. Doesn't have to be, though. It's a big mammoth. And riding on the back of this mammoth is a knight. Knight in shining armor. So we have an apple. Then we have someone getting a haircut. We have a mammoth. And on the back of the mammoth is a knight. Good. Now, on the knight's helmet, there are some red lips, like lipstick. Lips. There's lips on the side of the knight's helmet. The damsel in distress, right, that he helped last. Kissed him on the helmet. And so we have lips on his helmet. So we have apple, haircut, mammoth, knight, lips. Let's move to the next room. All right? So in the next room, I want you to see, maybe on something, if you're in the kitchen, it might be on the counter, if it's on a table, there's a huge bowl of spaghetti. Huge, as big as you want to make it. Really big bowl of spaghetti. Okay? Don't be careful not to put too much stuff in it. You start putting meatballs and stuff, and you're going to start remembering the word is meatball. You really do want to make it so when you look at that thing, you want to think spaghetti. You can even make spaghetti noodles like move or something like worms, whatever you want to do. Anything that's, whatever makes it more memorable for you is what works best for a memory palace. So we have spaghetti. Now next to the spaghetti, there's this guy hanging, looking over the thing of spaghetti, and he's got a lantern in his hand. And the lantern, he's using it, and the light's kind of shining down on the spaghetti. That's why you can see the spaghetti so well. Because we have spaghetti, and then we have lantern. All right? Now, right after you see the guy with the lantern, you see one of those little things that you pull the number out of, like you go to the DMV, and there's like a number thing. And up on the wall, there's this huge, big thing like the old alarm clocks that kind of drops down, this huge number, because the next word is number. But you want to go up and grab that little number out of there. Visually do that. Do that in your head. Actually grab that number. See the number flip. Okay, and then you move one more spot, and you see a guy there, and he's dipping his paintbrush down in some paint. And he walks over to the wall, and the cockpit of a jet has come through the wall there, and he's painting the inside of the cockpit. I know we're moving fast. You'll be surprised how powerful it is, how easy it is to remember these things. I'm going to go through them really quick for you. Just see them in your head. Spaghetti, lantern, number, paint, cockpit. Okay, go ahead and open your eyes for a second. We're going to get the rest of them in. How many of you feel like that if I asked you to walk through your memory palace, you could come up with all 10 items? Okay? Good. Can I have a volunteer then? Can somebody do it? Okay, you got it? Can I make a request? Can you do it backwards for me? Got it.
Spaghetti.
Uh-huh.
Want me to do it in the room?
Sure, if you can. Go for it. Absolutely. Yeah, go for it.
Okay.
Apple. Awesome. Good job. I put you on the spot by having you do it backwards. Sorry about that. Okay, good. So let's keep going. Let's get them all in there, right? Let's do a quick review. We have, go ahead and close your eyes. Let's go ahead and go there. If you're closing your eyes, if not, you can keep them open. Okay, I want you to picture them as I say them. Like I said, this is how you review a memory palace with your eyes shut. It looks an awful lot like my students are sleeping. I had to explain it to my administrator when we first started doing this, that we were not sleeping. Some students might sleep, though, so you want to be very careful that they're not sleeping while we're doing this. You'll know on the test, but you want to make sure. All right, so let's go ahead and review. All right, so we have apple, haircut, mammoth, night, lips, move to the next room, spaghetti, good. Lantern, number, paint, cockpit. Good. All right, next room. Let's keep going. You got the room? Okay. What I want you to see is on the wall, I want you to see a big heart. Like the cartoon heart, okay? Don't make it weird. Okay? There's a heart on the wall, and behind the heart is a big shield. Okay, the heart is on the shield. But you see the heart first. It's important that you see the heart first. Heart, and then shield. Now we're going to do something different. I want you to be part of this one. For some reason, when you see this heart and this shield, it kind of frightens you. And so you leap up into the air and land on a cow. Okay, you see the heart, you see the shield. The next word is leap. And the next word is actually cattle. So you want to maybe picture two cows there. Cattle. And while you're sitting on the back of this cow, you hear a weird noise and you look around in his mouth and he's chewing up a piece of paper. Now review that room. Heart, shield, leap, cattle, paper. By the way, if you do have trouble, sometimes like cow and cattle, you'll get those mixed up. Or it was completely, I would totally expect that someone would say barber instead of haircut. That was great. It's a good illustration. Sometimes you have to go back and remind yourself. Okay, maybe what you do is you brand the cow with a cat, like a cat emblem on the cow. So you remember it's a cattle, or something. To remind me it's not cow. Okay? Heart, shield, leap, cattle, paper. Got one more. One more room. So what I want you to picture is there's a vacuum cleaner, a vacuum. Right when you walk in, there's a vacuum there. You look underneath the vacuum, and it looks like someone accidentally sucked up in the vacuum an American flag. Now you see, standing at a little bit of a distance, in my head, an 8-year-old child, who's blonde. His name's Ty. Wait, no, just kidding. You can pick any child there. So, I was just kidding, because this child is the one who got the American flag in the vacuum. But what they're trying to do is act like they're a really good kid, and they have a halo above their head. Okay, so you have the vacuum. You have the American flag, and you have this kid. I picture one of my kids, the one most likely to suck up an American flag in a vacuum, standing there with a halo on his head. And now a blue jay flies in the window, grabs the halo off his head, and hands it to a sixth grader at your school. But you have to somehow remember that it's a sixth grader. What I do is I have the blue jay comes in, grabs the halo, hands it to the sixth grade teacher, who hands it to a sixth grader. And that's how I remember it's a sixth grader. So our last room is vacuum, American flag, halo, blue jay, sixth grader. So let's review. Go back to the beginning. Go ahead and review. I can do it out loud for you. You want me to do it out loud? Or you want to? Why don't you guys just do it quietly for a minute? Go back through yourself. How are we doing? I see a lot of smiles. Is this kind of fun? Okay, I just made memorizing 20 random words fun. So if that's all I did, I feel like I was successful. Students love this. I have students coming back from college now. I've been doing this for about 3 years. I have students coming back from college telling me that of all the things they learned at our school, besides maybe writing, writing and speaking, they would say memory palaces. They've taught, one girl came back from the master's college, California, and she had taught everybody on her floor how to do memory palaces to study for a test. They are very, very important. So what I want to do now is, should I have somebody do one? Somebody want to give it a shot, all 20? Forward or backward, you can do it however you want. How about in the back? Yep, right there. Nope, just took your glasses off. Go for it. Yep, start at the beginning, and you can go as far as you want.
Apple, haircut, mammoth, night, lips. Spaghetti, lantern, number, paint, pocket, heart,
Awesome.
Good job. I don't know if you've ever, have you guys ever seen when kids are doing chants up in front where you have one student that's doing the chant and what's everybody else doing? Mouthing the words, you were all doing that. Okay? I just watched that. Some of you said it out like, what is that? Okay? So that's the way memory palaces work. Okay? And they work on all sorts of things. We did random words. I know somebody might say, well, how often do you give students a list of random words? I don't know. I don't do it very often. But I certainly give them a lot of words that we can put into a memory palace, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So I have a list in here. For the sake of time, I have about 12 minutes, and I want to be respectful of your time. We're going to get out of here on time or early, as far as I'm concerned. But what I want to do is go through some of the uses that we've found of memory palaces at the River Academy. There for a while, my goal was to go to every classroom and say, what do you have to memorize? Whether it's pre-calculus, whatever the class is, what do you memorize in your class? And I started getting everything and just putting it into Memory Palace to see if it's possible. I can tell you right now, I still don't have all that stuff in my head. So if you were to ask me linear equations and things like that that I actually memorized, you end up clearing some of these things. I've memorized so many lists of random words and cards and all kinds of stuff in learning how to do this that eventually you have to let some of this stuff go. So you start to clear out rooms. But so one of the things, like I said, lists of words. There are times we have the memorized lists of words. The presidents, and I'm going to talk a little bit, if I have time, talk a little bit about the PEG system. That's the handout you got. Maybe I'll talk about that right now in case I don't get to everything. You can read through some of the other things. The PEG system is something you can add to your memory palace. What it is, it's a system of making numbers visual. There's two ways to do it. One of them is to take them and put a rhyme to them. For instance, one bun, two shoe, three tree, four door, five hive, six stick, seven heaven, you know, that thing. When you get up to 10, I guess when you get to 11, you do the same exact images, but you put them all on ice. So they're all encased in ice. So you have a bun that's encased in ice. You have a shoe that's encased in ice. You have a tree that's encased in ice. Okay, and those are, and what you do is you take those. For instance, if we were doing our list of 20, we would somehow take that apple and incorporate a bun, like a hamburger bun. Put hamburger buns on both sides of the apple. And it would remind you that the apple is number one in your list. If you were to get to number 9, in mine it's wine, and so. Number 9 on our list. By the way, if you ever wanted to go back and do these, what you can remember is if I were to give you a number, like 9, for instance, which is an easy way, you don't have to do the PEG system for a list like this. Okay, you can just do it by what's number 9? Well, you go to the second room, it's the second to last one. Right? So that's how you can do it pretty easy. But if you have a big list, like with my seniors, we were working on memory stuff just to kind of get them ready for college and also getting just generally helping them out in rhetoric. We memorized the presidents with their numbers. So 44 presidents and their numbers so that they could, if you gave them a number, they could tell you the president. Or if they gave you the president, they could tell you the number in just a couple seconds. And we did that by putting pegs. Like I said, if someone said 13... or whatever it is, I picture a frozen tree. And I picture a frozen tree on top of the little bus that's in Cars. His name's Fillmore, right? 13's Fillmore. Is that right? It's been a little while. So, anyways, that's the PEG system. That's one way to do it. Another thing that we do with memory palaces is you can use a link system. And what you do is, when you have different items, you can connect them all together. For instance, if we were to take these numbers and use the link system, you would still use a memory palace, but you would take them and you would have an apple there, and the apple would be getting a haircut. And guess who's giving the apple a haircut? A mammoth who's being ridden by. Okay, see how you do that? And you can just piece them all together, and it's less connected to a place and more connected to each other. And we did that with the states. With the states, we're able to connect all of the different things by creating associations. For instance, the first state is Alabama. So we pictured an album. Okay, and in the album, you have a bunch of cars going by, and then you really pay attention to Alaskar, the last one. Alabama, Alaska. And above the Alaskar, there's this air zone that has like the red and the blue and the little spikes like you see on the meteorologist. And that's air zone or Arizona. So you have Alabama, Alaska, Arizona. And you can do the whole states by connecting them and using associations. But let's go back to the uses of a memory palace. Lists of words, presidents, states, strings of numbers. Those are more for fun. I mean, we do that on Pi Day. You can memorize those pretty fast. Definitions for science, short summaries. I teach the Iliad and the Odyssey, and on the final test for the Iliad, the front page is just a blank sheet of paper with lines, and they write out 24 summaries, one summary for each book of the Iliad. And I give class time to come up with the summaries. We make them rhyme to make them fun. For instance, I think this year was Apollo's plague is bacon and Achilles' babe is taken was number one. So pretty easy to put in a memory palace when you make them fun. So then I actually give two class periods to help them put them into a memory palace. We take the time in class to do it. I don't send them home and say, put this into a memory palace. We do it together, especially early on. You send them home, it doesn't happen early on. That's why I think this is a tool of learning, is you actually need to walk them through. You assist them through it. I gave you lots of ideas. Some students, you just say, I want you to put it into a memory palace. Go. And you just kind of sit there, and they put it into a memory palace, and they say, Mr. Welch, I'm really struggling with getting the mammoth in there. And I was like, well, you can picture a mammoth like this. So once they've done it a while, they don't want you to walk through for them. They have their own creative, imaginative ideas. I kind of gave you all the images, but your next one you'll be able to do and put them in however you want. Logical fallacies. Okay, so I teach logic, so we do logical fallacies, 24 of them, and they memorize all 24 logical fallacies. Now, one thing to mention about these is technically, obviously, memory palaces is a tool of learning. There's no claim that just because you memorize something in a memory palace that you're going to have it forever. Okay, it's just not, nothing creates memory stuff that lasts forever. So what we tend to do is we choose carefully the things that I have them put things in memory palaces. A lot of times it is the tools of learning. It's a tool. For instance, in my hermeneutics class, I give them a really big list at the beginning of the year of things to observe in scriptures, contrasts, comparisons, lists, cause and effect, figures of speech, nouns, pronouns, questions and answers, all those things. And we, at the beginning of the year, put them into a memory palace, and we use them all year. So I'll say, all right, I want you guys to do an observation markup, which is, you know, where they circle the words and make connections and stuff with their Bibles. And I have them go through their memory. I don't give them the list back. They go through their memory palace and do them. The same with the logical fallacies. History flashcards, the Veritas cards. I've worked through each one of my kids, helping them put the Veritas cards into their heads. And so you can fill a whole house with Veritas flashcards. We've done it. Pre-calculus functions, if I can do that, anybody can do it. Like I said, I went to every classroom, there was no discrimination at all. And one of the first rooms I came to was she said, oh, we memorize these things. They're called functions. And so I had a line and line ear. There was an ear on the line, linear, and then, you know, square root. I pictured a square, and there was a root coming off of it because the thing went like this. And then there's cube root, and you can picture a cube, and then the root goes off a different direction. You can create memory. You can create visual things out of even the strangest things. Scripture. My oldest son is somewhat of a crammer, always has been. And so he came to me. It was about 9 p.m. on Thursday night. And, of course, the teacher just told him today to memorize that entire chapter of Proverbs. We're a rigorous school. And so he came to me and he said, I need to memorize Proverbs chapter 13. I'm like, okay, let's sit down and do it. How long do you have? It's due tomorrow. And so we took about an hour and we put the book Proverbs chapter 13 into a memory palace, and you can do that. Now, the interesting thing is, because we put it into a memory palace, was it cramming? Technically, yes. We waited till the last minute. But in a very strange way, he still knows it. because it was visual memory. Okay? So in some ways, it's still cramming. But it stays in there. So I don't know if that how that works. But the thing about memorizing scripture, yes.
Sorry,
yeah.
If you're memorizing something like scripture, I can see the kind of images, but how do you get all the little words and the connectors and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the question was, whenever you're memorizing something like Proverbs, how do you get the thes and the as and the ands in there? And the way you do it is you have to be somewhat familiar with it. You have to have read through it a couple times before you can put it into a memory palace. A memory palace really acts as a link to the knowledge that you have. So you would have to, we had to read through the passages a few times. He had already been taught through Proverbs 13. He didn't have it memorized, but he had been taught through it. So whenever I would say, you know, a wise man does the, he would be able to kind of give it back to me. So in some ways, you're just creating two or three images that really reminds you of the proverb that you've read through a few times. That's a great question. Because, yeah, it is harder with things that need to be verbatim. So you have to really be familiar with them. And then the memory palace creates the link to the knowledge. Yeah, that's a great question. Latin memory work, you use associations and things like that because, well, the words are in Latin. So you can't picture monao. So you have to create some sort of picture, like money or something. Speeches, shopping lists, basically anything you want. Well, I promised to get you out on time, 59:15. And so if you have any questions, I'll be sticking around for a little bit. And that's it. That's a great question.
Thank you.